There are just a few more things I want clarification on or elaboration on. Syntax as a metaphor for the world mm-hmm. is one of the things. And you hinted to this to some extent, but is there any more you can elaborate on that particular quote?
Well, there is a whole chapter dedicated to the hyperbaton, which is this reshuffling of the syntactical structure, which Gongora takes it from the Latin language itself, which is it's very common in Latin to this flexibility and freedom in syntactical structuring, but it's not in Spanish. And Gongora took it from Latin and brought it...
Applied it to Spanish.
Mm-hmm. And it creates, again, it's another form of distortion, and it creates a texture in language that... This is something that reading Gongora from the perspective of the 20th or the 21st century seems to make sense, but it's completely anachronic or to read it like that. But it kind of brings poetry to complete abstraction, because what's interested is the texture and the shapes and the forms and the construction itself, and not the theme or the meaning of the work. So in that sense, Gongora is 400 years ahead of all of us in creating abstraction in language. And he does that not only with hyperbaton, with the reshuffling on syntax, but with everything he brings into his poetry. So the reason I say syntax is a way of understanding the world, going back to the first quote that you read when we started talking of how writing or aesthetics is a form of cosmology, is that in the final analysis, this is not from an academic perspective, but from a writer perspective. What I'm interested in is trying to understand how writers create, through their writing, their vision of the universe. In the case of Gongora, he uses this reshuffling of syntax to reflect of his vision of the universe as unstable and in constant flux.
Chaotic,
as becoming. Not as being, but as becoming. And that's a very telling use of the hyperbaton. And I connect that to Borges, because in the case of Borges, it's not at the level of language itself, it's at the level of narrative construction, but he does the same thing. He uses these fundamental categories of experience and to construct narratives that threaten the linearity of space, the linearity of time, and the monolithic understanding of identity.
So the dominant cosmology that comes from these writers is the world is chaotic. There's not much you can do about it, so you might as well tickle the octopus.
Yeah.
Would you say that's an accurate way of describing where you end up with this?
No, I would go back to what I said before, is that the unsayability. It is chaotic. We see it as chaotic. It might be chaotic, but we also see meaning. And it's this flux between meaning and meaninglessness that keeps us going.
So we have to keep taking a stab at it.
We have to keep going. We cannot move to Canada.
Seriously. We have to stay here and fight. I mean, if it's the context of the recent election, we have to stay here and make things right.
Yeah.
And if it's the case of life, we have to realize what our limitations are and make the best of it.
I'm from Argentina. I'm not American.
I understand.
I can go back to Argentina.
I see. And if I were wearing my other hat, you'd see the Canadian, the maple leaf on it just to be on the safe side. I'm hedging my bets.
But you're not Canadian.
I'm not Canadian, but in my heart I am, and I'm very close.
You could move back to Cuba.
Well, that thought has occurred to me, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And I wonder how Cuba's going to respond to this. You know, there's a Cuban novelist whose work you mentioned in the book, too. Sardui, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We didn't, that was a whole other chapter that we didn't get into. Because most of the book is talking about the senses from the skin outward.
Yes.
But then you end up talking about more embodied senses. And the distortion gets into some very grisly kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Castrations and transvesticism. I don't think transvesticism is necessarily grisly.
Yeah.
But it's certainly
not. It has
not
to do with the makeup and the representation of the body. Yeah.
The distortion of the body,
one
would say. And, you know, when we talk about gender reassignment surgeries, we are talking about distortions mm-hmm. of how the body was originally
conceived
or came into the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you hope people end up reading, when they finish reading this book, have some kind of sense of hope or some kind of cheerful nihilism?
Cheerful nihilism.
That's what you're
I would say
about.
That, yeah. We don't have anything left but cheerful nihilism.
Well, I like that there's cheerfulness in it.
Yeah.
How does this kind of stuff go over with your students?
This is very difficult reading. Very difficult.
Tell me about it.
You know, I kind of went back for the translation and reread it. And I'm like, who wrote this? Because I do not recognize myself. You know, when you submerge yourself for so many years in studying and writing, and you don't realize to the depth that you go into the writing.
Or as Gertrude Stein said, I am not I when I write.
Yeah.
So you're tapping into forces larger than yourself.
Yeah, so I don't recognize myself in this book.
How long ago did this book come out in Spanish?
2009.
So that's not really that long ago.
It's not that long, no. Yeah. But it took me about 5 years to write it, from 2004, 2003 to 2000.
Right. So the original idea goes back at least 12 or so years.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What kind of market do you think there is for this kind of work?
Three people.
Closer says the market for his work is cuatro gatos.
Cuatro gatos. Well, I'm even less than Closer.
But at least you have people reading it.
Yeah, but you know, they keep translating it. I got a call from Almenara Publishing House. You know the Cuban guy who does Buque? So they want to do a re-edition of the book in Spanish in Holland. So some people read it, and I guess some academics understand it. But I like to think, you know, I call myself an imposter as an academic because I don't follow the usual paths. I'm interested in answering my own questions, not the questions that academia try to answer when it comes to understanding literature.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to tell you that this book was for me a history lesson, and it was a beautiful, mind-opening exercise for me. And it was difficult, but this is a difficulty that is worth the effort. And I'm grateful that you had this book translated into English so people like me could have a better understanding, whether they agree with you or not, a better understanding of one take of what has gone before. And at least there is some kind of cheerfulness that comes from this. So thank you for your time and continued success with your work.
Oh, thank you so much, Paul. Now I can say I made it.